Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
From MCIE.
I remember when I was a special education teacher, people would say, well, you know, why is this child in my class? He can't, and then they, you know, fill in the blank. He can't read, he can't talk, he can't whatever. What are they gonna get out of it? They're so far behind grade level. So all of this kind of deficit thinking kind of focused on these students. And I would always be like, they're gonna get a lot out of it. There's so many things that we don't even think about that are happening in this general education classroom that are so, so helpful.
Hello and welcome to Season 8, Episode 6 of the Think Inclusive podcast presented by MCIE. I'm your host, Tim Villegas. This podcast features conversations and commentary with thought leaders in inclusive education and community advocacy. Think Inclusive exists to build bridges between parents, educators, and disability rights advocates to promote inclusion for all students. That's right, y'all. All means all. To find out more about who we are and what we do, go to thinkinclusive.us, the official blog of MCIE, and check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. So it's April, everyone, and you know what that means. It's Autism Acceptance Month. And on the blog, I wrote a piece about ways educators can learn autism acceptance from autistic individuals. And one of those ways is to amplify disability rights activists in your classroom. So if that sounds interesting, check it out. And lots of other great information at thinkinclusive.us. Today on the podcast, we talk with Jenny Kurth, professor of special education at the University of Kansas. We discuss preparing for and implementing participation plans for students with complex support needs to be included in general education, and why we should all carry around a pocket-sized version of IDEA. Will you be the person to bring our patron number to double digits? Go to patreon.com/thinkinclusivepodcast to become a patron today. Your contribution helps us with the cost of audio production, transcription, and promotion of the Think Inclusive podcast. Thank you for helping us equip more people to promote and sustain inclusive education. Stick around after the break, our interview with Jenny Kurth. Today on the Think Inclusive podcast, I would like to welcome Dr. Jenny Kurth, who is the Associate Professor of Special Education at the University of Kansas. Her research centers on inclusive education for students with extensive and pervasive support needs. Welcome to the podcast, Jenny.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me here, Tim.
So the reason why that I even thought about like we need to get Jenny on is the article that you wrote in CEC. And of course, I don't have it in front of me. It's actually up here. Well, let me grab it. You can see I'm very prepared.
I know the feeling.
All right. So the article is called Preparing for and Implementing Effective Inclusive Education with Participation Plans. And something at MCIE that we're really... that we love doing is doing like individual student planning for students who are included in general education. And I love the article and I have lots of questions. So I wanted to dive in this with you. But before we get into like the, you know, what a participation plan is and everything, I'd love for you to talk about why inclusive education is a matter of social justice?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And it made me, think about a couple of different things. And one of the things that we know, just, really solidly know, is that people with disabilities or who experience disabilities have inequitable outcomes upon leaving school. And so when we think about, what has been happening for people who have disabilities over the past 45 years or even longer? Well, they've been separated, segregated, controlled, decisions made for them, lack of communication supports. All of these sorts of things have just been the status quo in education for all of this time. And so when we start talking about inclusive education, I think we're really talking about disrupting those practices that are focused on, control, segregation, those sorts of things that can maybe lead to better outcomes for people. And when you just look, briefly at what does social justice mean, if you look in the dictionary, it talks about the distribution of wealth, opportunity, and privilege within a society. And if you think about where is the wealth, opportunity, and privilege within schools, it's in general education. It is not in those separate special education classes. And so we think about, what are the wealth in the general education classrooms? Well, it's the kids without disabilities who you can talk to and play with and learn with. It's the teachers who are content area experts. It's the opportunities to have a structured curriculum with the scope and a sequence. The opportunities tie into all of those things as well, in terms of having a real curriculum and not just like a series of random worksheets or something like that people are just pulling together to teach with. And then obviously, the privilege, the opportunity to learn, the privilege of having high expectations of, being a member of a classroom and a valued member of the classroom nonetheless, the dignity of learning and the dignity of having opportunities to learn from and with other people. So, you just think kind of even simply that there's so many opportunities related to social justice that happen in these inclusive settings that we really need to focus on. I think that as inclusive education in and of itself doesn't do that. You can't just put a kid in a classroom and all of a sudden, there's social justice happening and all of the inequities disappear, but you have to plan for it. We have to really think about how we're going to support people and to meet their needs and have that general education classroom be the place where they are valued, they're learning, they're having opportunities, all of those sorts of things. So to me, those are some of the reasons why inclusive education is an issue of social justice. And I'm really anxious as a field to start moving into a place where we don't have to talk about these kinds of advocacy people for students with disabilities, that we can really say, everybody belongs and that there's no like false binary anymore about either special education for special things or general education for everybody else, but that there's really this one common education that can really meet the needs of everybody. And I think what's kind of exciting to me is that we're at a place in our field where we know how to do that. When people started advocating for inclusive education, before I was born, and that's what's also disheartening, I guess, to me, is that we've been talking about this for a long time. But when people started talking about inclusive education, it came only from that place of social justice, that it felt like the right thing to do. Separating and segregating felt wrong. But now we know how to do it. We know that it results in positive outcomes, you know, for kids with disabilities and without disabilities, that, you know, parents prefer it. We just have so much overwhelming, you know, legal, philosophical, and research-based reasons to do it that there's just really no reason to continue on with the status quo, in my opinion.
With the new focus on equity, especially, I mean, in education, we've been focusing on equity for a long time, but mm-hmm. it seems like there is a sea change in other fields to look at equity. Mm-hmm. Are you hopeful that that is also going to bring some new light?
I am always hopeful about that. I was talking somewhat about this in our class last night, where I'm teaching people to be special education teachers, and that, you know, talking with them about some of the things that they were raised with in terms of having kids with disabilities in their classrooms or their schools, even the focus around social justice and equity happening kind of nationwide and even worldwide right now, that it starts to help us move in that direction. And I feel, you know, maybe as an older person now, that the next generation has a lot going for it in terms of what they're going to be offering. But part of it is that we still need to keep doing the work. We can't just wait for the next generation to come and say, you know, we're woke. We understand social justice and equity. We need to really teach people and teach ourselves to look for and really be critical thinking about the instances of inequity that happen in our schools. You know, you just peel back the lid a little bit and you see it everywhere. And so it reminds us there's a lot of work to do. You know, we were kind of thinking about, you know, equity and opportunity and high expectations can play out in so many different ways. But one of the things that I think I often see is that we have so many examples in our schools and communities that keep positioning people with disabilities as being special and needing special things. So it's anything from Night to Shine or unique learning systems or those sorts of things that are just saying, you know, there's this assumption that people with disabilities have special needs versus human needs. And I think getting away from that euphemism about being special and having special needs can help us focus more on human needs and then therefore take us closer to this place of equity that I think we're seeking. So I'm trying to really hard to, in my teacher preparation, to have people really look for those and say, what are the things that are happening that are making these people with disabilities seem that they're somehow special or different? And how can we reframe that through advocacy? Or just, you know, simply like everyone goes to the same prom. It's the prom. We should all be able to have fun together, you know, those sorts of things. And so I think by really taking that close look, we can start to get there a little bit faster. But I think there's also work for us to do in terms of, you know, people like me who are doing teacher education and doing research, that we need to be at the forefront as well. Changing some of the ways that we're going about doing our research, that we have to involve students with disabilities more. They need to be centered in our decisions and not doing things for and about them as we have kind of historically been doing. And then also, you know, making sure that the research agendas that we lay out are based on their needs and their preferences and their desires and not so much about what's easy for me to do as a researcher, for example. So really trying to kind of lead in those ways, but then also just thinking about, you know, even some of the language that we're using. I hate special education, for example. Right. To me, that is really, when you say you're a special education teacher or you're working in special education, it takes people to these assumptions that, oh, you must be, you know, really patient and kind. I'm not. I'm really impatient and I'm probably not very nice either. Like I want to make things happen for people. So, you know, taking that away and then having this special education makes people assume that there's a classroom with special things in it. And if maybe instead we started talking about, you know, specialized supports or something like that, so that it's really thinking about supports that follow people wherever they go versus having the special education program or place, that might kind of help us. Maybe, hopefully, move in other directions as well.
Yeah, you know, I don't think I ever put it together in the law. It doesn't actually say special education. until I really started to look at it. It's always interesting.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Like when you actually look at IDEA, Congress did a good job. There's things I would obviously change, but there's a lot in there that is strengths-based and kind of forward-thinking and really, you know, focusing on outcomes. And if it's almost like, you know how when you watch people in the Senate or something and they pull out their copy of the Constitution from their front pocket, like, I wish we could just, like, pull out our copy of IDEA from our front pockets and be like, well, you know, Section 600.331 says, I just feel like it's there and we just need to live up to that kind of lofty aspirations that are already in IDEA.
Right. Yeah. It's like the original document, you know?
Right. Exactly.
That's a good idea, Jenny. Maybe we should market that.
A pocket IDEA. It's kind of dorky, but but I always think it might be helpful. I don't know.
What are you reading there? Oh, I'm just reading IDEA.
Just IDEA. It's just cool.
Yeah. Fine. And then I've got a binder of the Federal Register.
Right. Right. Exactly. You know, good stuff.
Good stuff. Right. Okay. Well, let's talk about the participation plans, because I really enjoyed reading this.
Oh, good.
Why don't you set it up for our listeners? Because I'm sure you could do a better job than I could. And so, you know, what is a participation plan, and why should educators use them?
Yeah. So when we were thinking about doing this little, you know, creation of these participation plans, it was really based on kind of two things, I guess, to me. One is that I remember when I was a special education teacher, people would say, well, you know, why is this child in my class? He can't, and then they, you know, fill in the blank, he can't read, he can't talk, he can't whatever. What are they going to get out of it? They're so far behind grade level. So all of this kind of deficit thinking kind of focused on these students. And I would always be like, they're going to get a lot out of it. There's so many things that we don't even think about that are happening in this general education classroom that are so, so helpful. And so for me, the participation plan is one way of starting to outline those things and say, here's why general education is a meaningful place for every student. It's not a place you have to earn your way into and all of those sorts of things, but something helpful for everybody. But then I also was thinking when we were creating it that having a plan that's co-created with general and special education teachers is really, really helpful in terms of bringing their joint expertise to this planning, but then also making sure their planning was oriented around research-based practices so that it was giving them sort of a structure to think through so that when they were thinking about a student coming into their classroom for this particular unit or whatever, that they would be able to draw on some research-based practices to guide their discussions. And so it starts with, and I did print mine out because I would remember, it starts with an ecological assessment. And so part of the idea there is that this has been something that, you know, we talk about in special education forever, that you need to understand what the demands of the environment are and make sure that we understand where a student does and does not need support during these sort of typical routines. And so taking the time to say, you know, Jenny needs support here, but not here is really helpful so that I'm not over supported and develop learned helplessness or, you know, something like that, but that I do get the support when I need it so that I'm able to keep learning. So we want to just be careful to do those ecological assessments and say over this, you know, typical activity. So maybe in this science class, it starts off with a warm-up on the board, and then the teacher does a lecture, and then there's a lab, and then there's writing in your planners at the end of the class period. So those are the four things that typically happen. Let's just see what supports Jenny would need for each of those four parts. And then having that sort of as the foundation can help us layer in support so that we know when and what to do. We also wanted to really focus on sort of the hidden skills so that maybe you know, in this participation plan, it's really focused on identifying times to work on IEP goals and then priority learning skills. But even outside of those, there's lots of hidden opportunities to learn. Like maybe I'm still learning to raise my hand instead of calling out, or I'm learning to communicate with my lab partners using my communication device or whatever that might be. So those would be opportunities to work on additional skills that are maybe not the priority for that content area. Thinking about what supports I would need. So are there kind of general supports that everybody has or really individual supports that I would need? And one of the things that I like in terms of focusing on general supports is that when we look in a you know, typical general education classroom, there's a lot of supports already provided. Maybe there's, you know, words written on the wall or a timer or a schedule or those sorts of things that we can start to build from, and then making sure that those are available to everybody. And then recognizing that some kids will also need more individualized supports, like maybe I need a couple other words written on my desk or something like that to help me. Then it goes into embedded instruction, so how we're going to find opportunities to teach skills, and then linking those to linking the skills that we're going to be teaching to the content that's happening. So for example, if we're learning about the digestive system, I'm going to have some priority skills related to that learning about the digestive system. And so that could be a really helpful conversation to have with a general education teacher. I know when I was a teacher, and I've had this happen in research opportunities too, when I go and ask that science general education teacher, for example, like, what are kids going to learn in this unit about the digestive system? They're going to come at me with like 57 vocabulary words, 30 science lab skills, 25, content related things or something like that. And so that's great for some kids. There are some kids who are going to learn all of that, and some kids who are going to learn a subset of that. And so working with that general teacher and saying, well, out of all of those really great things, because I know how much you love science, what are the things that are really important that you want every person to remember from this unit 15 years from now? And then if we can kind of start to hone in on what those things are, those could become the priority learning skills for students who have more extensive and pervasive support needs who are in that general education classroom. And so thinking about that priority skills can help us make some of those decisions about what should we base our accommodations and modifications on? What should the general education teacher make sure that they say every class period so that we're reinforcing those big skills, and just really making sure that we're focusing on them and giving kids opportunities to learn those things. And so to me, the participation plan can be a way to start bringing those ideas together and making sure that we have, you know, an idea of how we're going to be teaching kids, and that it makes sense, and that we all think that there's useful things happening for the students in the class, and we all know what we want people to be learning and how they're going to be learning it when they're in that class. So I think it's helpful in aligning, you know, those instructions and modifications, for example.
You know, how do we support teachers when they don't have built-in collaboration time? And, you know, it's kind of like that same idea, right? You know, what is this kid going to get out of it? I mean, I'm mm-hmm. going to have to spend all this extra time planning yeah. for this student. So how can we talk? How can we speak to that?
It's a legitimate, good question, because I hear it all the time, and it sounds like you do too. And it's the reality. I mean, we are asking teachers to do so much and not giving them the time and resources to do it. So I don't want this kind of planning thing to feel like one of those. So a couple of thoughts. One is that, say my student is involved in this science class all year long, which hopefully they are. They're a full-time member of this science class. We might spend a little extra time doing this planning together, the first 1, 2, 3 units of instruction. But then we're like, yeah, we know what to do during lecture. So even if we're learning about the digestive system or astronomy or whatever, we got a plan for lectures. Oh, and guess what? We've also got a plan for labs. oh, and guess what? We've got a plan for, you know, taking notes from the board. So it becomes something that there are skills that you're generating that are going to be useful across time. Now, let's say, boy, you know, this science teacher had a really out of the box idea and they're going to do a task that we've never planned for before. I might need to then sit back down with that Gen Ed teacher and talk about this unique thing that's happening. But, you know, teachers don't often do that. And it's because they don't have the time or resources to do a lot of, you know, really creative thinking. And if they do, it could still be a shorter conversation planning around that one unique thing. So that's one thought, is that this is a skill and a task that's going to be transportable across the student's day. So I could even then say, hey, when I was talking to Tim, the science teacher, I'm going to now bring some of these ideas to Kayla, the English teacher, and say, hey, these are some things we thought about for lecture. What do you think? How would that work in your classroom? And then it's going to help those conversations unfold easier. And the other thing is, you know, I think it is part of being a teacher is that you have to be a leader and an advocate. And if you want to have high quality instruction, you have to bring those leadership and advocacy skills to your principal and say, I need to be part of grade level team meetings, or I need to be part of content level team meetings so that I can have time to talk to teachers during the dedicated times when that's already happening at our schools. So that's one other thing. And then I think we can also be a little bit more flexible in how we do planning. There's no reason that this participation plan couldn't be put on a Google Doc or something like that, where you can start taking notes and filling it out together online, but not together. And so that then I can see, you know, what Tim wrote and I can add to it or something. And so then when we do have 2 or 3 or 5 minutes to talk in person, it's just catching up about what we already wrote in this, you know, shared e-document that we're working from. So I think to me, that's an example of having to be a flexible thinker and an advocate. There's never going to be more time or more money or all the things that we want, but we have to be creative about, you know, finding another way to do things. And I think it was Mark Gold in the 70s who kind of, you know, trademarked that, talking about special education was find another way. And it's kind of like the living, you know, mantra, I guess, in my life. If this way didn't work, we got to find another way, because it's so important that we keep doing these things. And so figure out what works for you, and thinking about this as being a, you know, over time saver. There's a little bit of investment up front, but over time it'll save you a lot of collaboration and planning and kind of on the spot decision making that could lead to bad decisions, honestly, for students. If you're just always like, I don't know what to focus on, so we're going to just do this activity. Whereas having a plan would make us be more conscious and mindful of what the goals are for the student and how they're going to be supported to meet those goals, rather than, you know, leaving it up to chance or, you know, coming up with things moment by moment all the time, which I know I did too much of as a teacher. I didn't have a great plan, and I wish that I would have. And, you know, because I didn't have a great plan, a lot of times those decisions were left to paraprofessionals who are working with students. And they're, you know, that was my first job, being a paraprofessional, and that's a really difficult position to put untrained teachers in, to make those decisions. So we need to be kind of upfront in helping people make those decisions and having some, you know, structure to fall back on.
Let's say you were appointed the U.S. Secretary of Education. Sorry, Dr. Cardona. Dr. Kurth is now the Secretary of Ed. What would be your biggest priority?
It's hard to say my biggest, but I think one of the things that I would really want to address is this outdated version or notion of the least restrictive environment. I am thinking that the only people in the United States we talk about their degree of appropriate restrictiveness is kids with disabilities and prisoners who are incarcerated in jails and prisons. And it just seems like such an odd thing to me that we even talk then about how restricted some people should be when they've committed no crimes. You know, they're not a danger to society. They're just kids trying to go to school and learn, but for some reason we're treating them like prisoners. So I would like to just get rid of that. I know that when the LRE was first proposed, it was kind of intended to be this, you know, short-term thing to kind of get kids back into school or get kids into schools, but it has far outlasted its use. And there is no reason to have this continuum of placements. anywhere in federal law, because we have so much evidence showing that it's not helpful to separate and segregate students at all, ever. You can find hundreds, probably thousands of research articles showing the importance and the positive outcomes associated with inclusive education for students with complex support needs. But I challenge you to find even one demonstrating even one positive outcome for a separate or segregated setting. So the evidence is so clear that we just don't need to have that anymore. And I think when people have thought about the LRE, you know, back in the 70s, they were like, well, you know, teachers aren't trained yet. They were just admiring all the barriers, but we don't need to do that in 2021 or whenever, you know, IDEA is reauthorized. That's an easy thing we can do. And I think I also mentioned I would really like to eliminate just the very idea of special education and start focusing more on supports and have instead of having kids qualify for special education because of an educational label and a need for special education, both of those things are markers for segregation. And so instead, if we said, what are the support needs that a student has, and really thought about those in terms of communication support needs or behavior support needs or academic support needs or physical support needs or whatever, and then said, let's design an education system that addresses those supports through specialized supports versus through special education, which is kind of, you know, a mess. It's just not very effective, honestly. So really thinking about, to me, those two things, I think, would make a really big difference in how we thought about, you know, the dignity and the right to learn and all of those things of students with complex support needs, and to think about promoting inclusive education for them as well.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I would nominate
you. Thanks, Tim. I don't want the job, though. That sounds like a lot.
Yeah, it does. It does. This has been a great conversation. Let me see if I missed anything. I think we covered it all. Is there anything that you wish that you could tell our audience?
I think what I wish I could tell the audience is I'm going to base this around a person who's living in Kansas for the last 7 years. When you live in Kansas and people hear you're from Kansas, they bring out all the Wizard of Oz jokes. And so you're like, oh yeah, you know, I've heard the one about where's Toto and like click my shoes and whatever. But one of the things that I like about the Wizard of Oz, and this is something I heard somebody else say, is that Dorothy, poor Dorothy, was stuck over the rainbow and just wanted desperately to go home. And she didn't know the whole time that she was so sad that she could have just clicked her shoes and gone home. And she had a lot more power than she realized she had throughout that whole film. And I think that's what I would want people listening to this to think about, is that you have so much power that you might not even recognize that you have in terms of promoting positive outcomes and a dignified experience and inclusive education for learners with the most complex support needs. And so I hope that you use that power and that you're not afraid to use it to do good work.
All right. Well, thank you again to Dr. Jenny Kurth for being on the Think Inclusive podcast. We appreciate your time. That will do it for this episode of the Think Inclusive podcast. Subscribe to the Think Inclusive podcast via Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or on the Anchor app. And while you're there, give us a review so more people can find us. Have a question or comment? Email us at podcast@thinkinclusive.us. We love to know that you're listening. Thank you to patrons Pamela P., Veronica E., Kathleen T., and Mark C. for their continued support of the podcast. This podcast is a production of MCIE, where we envision a society where neighborhood schools welcome all learners and create the foundation for inclusive communities. Learn more at mcie.org. We will be back at the end of April with a special bonus episode. And if you don't already subscribe to our newsletter, The Weeklyish, check us out at weeklyish.substack.com. Thanks for your time and attention. See you next time. And remember, inclusion always works.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.